Hi, ladies and gents. Welcome tonight to the latest Trinity Tims podcast. My name is James Forrest from the Celtic blog, and I'm here as ever with my colleagues Joe McHugh from Video Celts and Eric Knott from Read Celtic. Little bit of bad news today before we start. Our Lisbon Lion John Clark passed away today. John was in his 80s, and he's one of the last remaining members of that elite group of ours. And our thoughts are with his family and his friends at what I'm sure is an extraordinarily hard time. It's a hard time for the whole Celtic family. That generation of players deserve to be immortalised. And naming a couple of stands after them are certain members of the team. It somehow doesn't seem like enough. The club should be thinking about other memorials and some kind of permanent memorial with that whole team and what they did. Something with all the faces on it so future generations know who each and every one of them were. I'm just spiffballing here. Every time one of these things happens, it brings it home to you how close we are to losing that whole generation forever, and it'll be a sad day when that happens. Any of you guys want to talk on that, Joe?
Yeah, I'll go in an unusual track, but I remember the summer of 1997, Celtic was a bit of a shambles. I think it was Danny McGrain and Eric Black took pre-season training, but a few days later, Wim Jansen came into the equation, and I think just before Wim Jansen came in, Murdo McLeod was appointed reserve team boss and John Clark was kit manager. But Murdo very quickly became the assistant manager. And I remember I was over at the pre-season tour in Holland, and I think Davey Hay and John Clark were both involved. And I think between them and Murdo, they got Vim into the way of Celtic. There'd be some traction between them as players. John Clark, apparently encyclopedic knowledge of world football, and that was very difficult to acquire in the 60s and 70s. But I think he quickly had affinity with Vim. Folk like Vim Jansen, they would naturally turn to John Clark and Davey Hay before they turned to Jock Brown, because they're football people. And There wasn't much promise over that tour of Holland. They won the first match 20-0, but the third match they lost 3-0 to Volendam, and a fair bit of abuse from Volendam fans. And I remember a very angry Dutch Celtic fan shouting abuse at Wim Jansen. But John Clark was there by his side, and it's great that over three, possibly four different stints at Celtic as a player, as a reserve coach, as an assistant manager, and then in 1997 they came back, and he was there in Seville. So he was in Lisbon, he was in Seville, both in official capacity. And one quirky thing about him, I think he's the only Lisbon Lion not to have written an autobiography. I saw an interview maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and he just says that, well, I'll keep my thoughts to myself. So Billy McNeil, Jim Craig, Tommy Gemmell, Ronnie Simpson, they've all produced books. A couple of them produced two books, but we never got a John Clark book, and that's uniqueness. We throw the term the Lisbon Lions together, but they've all got very different stories. They've got a lot in common, but they've got very different stories, different Celtic stories. Bertie Auld was there 3 times, but John Clark was involved in some pretty significant times, and he was a hell of a lot more than a kit man. He was somebody that Wim Jansen could trust, and got the ball rolling, and it was a up and down season, but it was worth it in the end. So sadly missed, and it's always the family. You see things on Twitter and that it's a Celtic hero, a legend, the guy it swapped. No, Stevie Chalmers has got Pelle's shirt, but he played against Pelle in 1966. I mean, he got about 2 or 3 Scotland caps. I mean, it's just pathetic. But he doesn't need the Scotland caps. He's got a good, strong family, and there's plenty of others out there in the respect and tribute to him. That means more to him than any Scotland caps or royalties from writing an autobiography. So that's sad news at lunchtime today.
What were you, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, look, it is very sad news, and I mean, definitely our thoughts will be with the family. I mean, I lost my dad a couple of years ago, so I know what it feels like. I know how tough that is for any family to go through losing, you know, a parent, and especially one who is as legendary as John Clark. I mean, obviously, there's so many stories about the guy, and I mean, going back to what Joe said there, I'll never fathom why he only got 4 Scotland caps, considering the era that he played in. And the level, you know, what he achieved as a player at club level, we all know what was behind that. But that was an absolute joke, you know, that a player achieved what he did and he only ended up playing for his country 4 times. That's just insane, you know. And I can never wrap my head around that. But if I tried to do that, I'd be wasting my time. I mean, I understood there that he did something between 65 and 67, he did something like 140 appearances, or I mean, it was crazy amount of appearances he had. So I mean, the guy's a legend, no two ways about it. And unfortunately, as you said, James, it's a stock that's dwindling, you know, the Lisbon Lions, and it's sad that, you know, they're slowly but surely dwindling away. And you know, you're 100% right when you say we have to eventually commemorate them with a major memorial of some sort. Because what they achieved is unprecedented, will never be achieved again. And it's the stuff of legend. And he was part of that legend. And as a result, he'd be sorely missed.
Thanks for that, guys. Just in case anybody from Safeco FC is watching this in relation to their new job, which is to monitor all club media channels. We're not actually a club media channel. So when we're talking about Mr. Clark not getting enough caps for Scotland, you can't actually sanction Celtic for it. Just want to make that clear to you. I know you take your role and responsibility seriously and all that, but we are not an official club channel. Otherwise, Joe wouldn't be allowed on it, let's face it. So, guys, another week goes by, and we've got some movement in the transfer market. We are in talks with a couple of players. We've got a couple over the line now. Unfortunately, almost all the major news on the transfer market is about Nicholas Kuhn and him possibly going to Leipzig. I wrote an article about Pat Bonner last week and his comments about the £15 million fee, and I was pretty pissed off that anybody was putting a figure like that in the public domain and ascribing it to what Celtic's valuation was. Exactly what I feared has happened now, and everybody is now talking about the £15 million fee. And we've even had articles suggesting that the £15 million fee might be too high for us to get. Chris Sutton was accused of having said that, but Sutton actually didn't say that. Sutton's comments were very different from that. He said that we shouldn't sell him right now for what a maximum value for him, and that Kuhn will prove himself to be worth more than that. But that's not how it was spun. What do you guys say? Joe, first, what do you think? And I sort of know what you think, but are we going to get some major transfer business anytime soon, i.e. business in the club and not business out of the club? And what do you think of this whole Kuhn situation? £15 million for me seems like a ludicrous number, if you ask me. I mean, if he has a good Champions League campaign, then that number's only going to go up and up and up and up. If we sell him right now, we're selling ourselves short. It's madness.
Saturday night, we got as good a confirmation as you get when Fabrizio Romano told us the transfer fee and the length of the contract that Benji and the Gren is signing. So that deal is done. So that's a start. But it's strange because all outgoing business has previously been when the player's at their best. Dembele was maybe shaded slightly, but still very close to the top. Kieran Tierney, Jota, etc. Wanyama, Fraser Foster, Virgil van Dijk, they've all been sold at the top. So I'm not too sure how credible. There'll be something going on, but Celtic will be desperate to sell anyone. I mean, whatever interest there is, Celtic's not going to say, go away. He's important for our Champions League qualifiers. This guy's essential for us. So Sutton's right. Possibly 15 million right now might be about right for Kuhn. But if he has a Champions League record, and well, first of all, there's a small matter of hopefully Nicholas Kuhn can help us through into the Champions League. But if he repeats his Champions League form next season, then he's certainly not a £15 million player. So if he does that again, he could be pushing towards £25 million. We've only had him for 18 months. I'm sick to death of folk telling me how horrendous he was in the second half of last season. Apart from Dyson Maeda, I don't know who did well in the final three, four months of the season. Cameron Carter-Vickers wasn't fantastic. Alistair Johnson wasn't fantastic. Various others were nowhere near, or weren't as good as they were in the first half of the season. And when Nicholas Kuhn was good, he was very good. He was unstoppable. And that was in the Champions League. So if they're entertaining talks at 15 million, it shows how detached they are from reality. He's in a long-term contract. One concern is he got booted out of Scottish football last season. There was two games against Jesse in the turn of the year. He just had free reign. He just had two red cards for both of those incidents. It's not good enough to say he should man up and toughen up. Should Rio Hatate toughen up for the assault that he took at Pittodrie? So there's other issues going on around it. But £15 million is underselling him. But I would expect the priority at Celtic, Michael Nicholson and his mentor, is to sell players. And then once they've sold players, we'll see what we can do about bringing players in. So Negrin coming in at this stage is an advance on last season, when Kasper Schmeichel and Vidal Salasalo were the only signings that went to the American tour. None of them outfield players. So the Swedish boy, he looks the part. He looks as if he's ready for Celtic. And again, on the transfer fee front, we are getting him for a steal. If we're getting him for 1.5 million euros, that's fantastic. If he'd 18 months or 2 years to go in his contract, he'd be looking at £6-7 million. So we're getting him for a steal. Well done if we can get that done. And let's see if there's some more guys out there like that. We don't need to be spending £10-11 million. I'm sure there's players that are 23, 24, breaking into the international side in the back of a good domestic season and coming to Celtic can improve their careers. So the usual glass half full, glass half empty from me.
Eric, what were you, mate?
Yeah, I agree in principle with everything that you guys are saying. I mean, 20 million is the minimum. We discussed that last week. 15 million in my estimation is just derisory for a player who has achieved what he achieved last season. He's, as Joe said, and it's a very fair point, every other player had a bad back end of the season for Celtic. It wasn't just Nicholas Kuhn. So he can't be singled out for those performances, because he was amongst a group of players who didn't play well. And I think that was that kind of bred down into the squad overall, and it affected the players overall. So to say that he was poor in that part of the season is irrelevant as far as I'm concerned. What he did do was deliver when it mattered, and that was in the Champions League. He proved that he's that level of player, that he has that kind of caliber, and that he can perform in those kind of, you know, atmospheres and those kind of tough games that we play in the Champions League. So for me, that's where his valuation should come from. And his valuation is, as I said last week, and you guys both agreed with me, it should be nothing less than 20 million. And if the board are entertaining, which I'd be skeptical about that. I wouldn't understand why the board would entertain such a low bid for a player who if they have a brain, they know he's worth more than that. They also know that he's only been with us a season and a half, realistically speaking. And that if we get another good season in the Champions League, but, you know, obviously that revolves around us qualifying. But if we get another good season in the Champions League and he proves himself yet again, then there's no reason that we couldn't get 20, 25 million for him then. So, you know, if the board are willing to play the long game with him, then that would make sense. But the question you got to ask is, can you trust our board to be that sensible? You never know. You just never know with them, and you never know what they'll do. So from my perspective, I just think a lot of it is hyperbole. A lot of it is, as you said, what Pat Bonner did, and that perception that's been put out that he's a 15 million player. Everybody's just picked up on that and everybody's running with it now. But ultimately, let's be honest about it, it's not the press or rumor mongers or any of those people who will decide what price he goes for. The board will decide what price he goes for when the time comes. And if and when that time comes, whether it's in the summertime now or whether they choose to keep him another season, we won't know for sure. But the reality is they'd be fools if they took 15 million for him. It's that simple. There's no other way of looking at it. And I know we give them a hard time. I know we constantly call them out for a lot of the crap that they do at the club. I really just don't think that they're that stupid. I think they know there's more money for Kuhn, and they know that Kuhn's value can rise if he has another very good season. So for once, I just hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm right in this instance, and that they don't prove me wrong, put it that way. I know it's inevitable. We probably might end up selling a big name player. But if they did decide to, I mean, look, if Red Bull Leipzig are serious about taking Kuhn to Germany, then they need to say to Red Bull Leipzig, right, 20 million, then we'll talk.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Joe, saw the smile on your face there. Are they that stupid?
They're not stupid. All they are is obsessed with the balance sheet. They don't look at Nicholas Kuhn's ability. They don't look at what they probably look and say he could break his leg in the first day of pre-season training. Here's an offer coming in. If there's a 15 million, I think it'd be very difficult for the sale. I think they seemed to manage it last year with Matt O'Reilly. But if a 15 million pound bid came in for any player, I think the Celtic board would certainly start speaking to that club. So it's not as if they'd kick it into touch. 15 million pound and they're round the table.
That's a sobering thought. As I said there, man, that's they seem to think about valuation rather than value an awful lot. Kuhn's the kind of guy who, if he's on his game, could get you into the next stage of the Champions League. But that doesn't seem to be a factor in the way they do these things. I'm going to ask you guys a question, right? Rodgers was talking at the end of the season in terms of players who've been here a while who might fancy a challenge somewhere else. We all assume that that's a reference to Hatate. But if it's not a reference to Hatate, then who is it a reference to? And this is why we all had a bit of a... We all suffered some minor heart palpitations, we'll say, when Cameron Carter-Vickers' name got mentioned not that long ago. But Celtic seem to have shut the door on that and said that Carter-Vickers is happy at the club, there's no interest in him for elsewhere, and that it won't be welcomed if it comes. So if it ain't him and it ain't Hatate, then it's Maeda, isn't it? And who else is it? Who else can it be? What's going on? What is Rodgers? What did Rodgers mean by that comment? Sure.
It'd be stirring things up. I don't think there was anything specific on it about how long folk had been at the club. It was Hatate, Carter-Vickers, they're the longest serving players that have been signed. If you look back, that fantastic Dom Mackay transfer window, almost all those players have gone. Juranovic, Kyogo, Abada, Giakoumakis, possibly others as well. So there's Carter-Vickers is the only one possibly from that transfer window that's still there. Joe Hart's gone as well. So
Starfield,
yep. So it was just I don't think he was pointing the finger at the longest serving players there. It was just sort of mentioning that there's turnover, there's churn, but you've got to manage that and. Hopefully, there's a football input into it rather than an accountancy input. And I mean, in particular with Kuhn, we are highly dependent on wingers, and we're very short on wingers. So in these Champions League qualifiers, Brendan Rodgers will be wanting to have four on-form fit wingers ready to play in that match. two of them starting and two coming on after 60, 65, 70 minutes to make a similar impact. And if Nicholas Kuhn isn't one of them, then crossing our fingers, well, we can get something out of James Forrest, I'm sure, over both matches, but not too much. We can expect absolutely nothing from Yang. And with Maeda, there's possibly a decent call for saying that he could be better as a striker. So we desperately need to at least sign one winger, and we desperately need not to sell one winger, and that winger is Nicholas Kuhn. So Telio, ta-ta, he can go, Palmer can go, and Yang can go, and they won't be missed. The manager needs four good on-form wingers for those two matches to give us the best possible chance of reaching the Champions League, and nothing should be put in place to jeopardise that. So I wouldn't read too much into the timeline with Brendan Rodgers, but it was similar to Ange after his first season, and then the bit of the Champions League told you, don't get too attached to your heroes, and quite soon some of them started to move. So it's along those lines rather than specifics to say, watch out, Carter Vickers and Hatate Arofsky.
Just a quick question, and you don't see Yang has a future at the club? You don't think that Rodgers has found something in him and is turning him into a better player?
No, it was last resort. He wasn't ahead of anyone else getting game time.
No, he was never really start-heady.
He's been given a number of games. He's it wasn't particularly through choice, and I don't think he would ever start a match with Yang. And he'd a good 20 minutes against Bayern Munich, and other players, they'll blow hot and cold, but he wouldn't be relying or dependent on Yang to do things. He scored two goals away to St Mirren when we were toiling a wee bit, and we ended up winning five. So there's been little bits of impressive play here and there, but over the he's had two seasons at Celtic. Think what Lyle Abada did in his two seasons at Celtic. Yeah. So he's not the worst. He's ahead of Palmer, he's ahead of Telio, but he's not someone you'd hang your hat on to get through Champions League qualifiers and then to be playing in Champions League ties and have the impact that Kuhn's had this season or Maeda.
What about you, Eric?
Well, the fact that we're even discussing Yang, you know, or relying on Yang to get us into or through the Champions League qualifiers is an alarming thing in its own right.
Big question is it we start a meaningful game if there's any other option? And the answer to that seems to be no. I think we all know the answer to that is no.
Definitely, but going back to what you said, like about Maeda, Maeda has to be off limits. They have to.
Oh, just, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. He just can't. And for me, CCV can't either. And
if losing Kuhn is the price of keeping Maeda at the club for at least another year. It's a small
I did a poll. I did a Jules sort of an article there on Saturday. And I asked out of, I think it was 12 players in total, who was the best striker since the King. And 80% in the poll was Dyson Maeda. You know, so the fans spoke themselves. Everybody thinks that he is the next best striker since Henrik Larsson. And, I think he proved that last season, very much scoring what the level of goals. Now, I know Kyoga had a 30-plus season as well while he was with us. But you could see he just didn't fit into Brendan's way of doing things to the same level that he did when he was under Ange Postecoglou. So, yeah, I mean, for me, we have to definitely retain Maeda, and we have to retain CCV. And if Kuhn is the sacrifice for that, I would definitely take that. Much of all, as I hate to say it, because I really like Nicholas Kuhn, but I couldn't see us doing without the other two guys. But we also have to have four good wingers going into this qualifier.
Yeah,
no two ways about it. Yes, James could do us a turn, no doubt about it. He's still, he's still in good shape, and he could do us a turn. But I suppose another aspect of that is the level of opposition that we're going to be facing. So I suppose we just have to wait and see what comes out of that too. But it is, look, it's always the same at this time of the year. You worry about, you know, what our board would do or what players our board would consider selling. And Joe's probably right in what he said there. You know, they'll entertain, they'll start talking at 15 million at least with Nicholas Kuhn. But But I mean, they're renowned for playing hardball, so it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out if it does happen. But yeah, I mean, we definitely, we do not want to be going into this Champions League qualifier relying on the likes of Yang. That would just be shambolic, you know. And we talked about it enough last season that it just wasn't good enough having that, having been put in that position after selling Kyogo, where we had to move Daizen Mayeda into the middle and then we had to rely on Yang on the wing because James Forrest was injured for such a long time. We should never have been in that position. And we shouldn't be talking about that going into Champions League qualifier either. So, yeah. Get those wingers in. Get that striker in. And that midfielder and that central defender. But, you know, all those things we know we need.
Yep.
So, yep. We'll wait and see how it pans out. Look, the early signs, the green shoots aren't too bad so far. But it would want to get a little bit more exciting.
Yep. One of our regular viewers has asked about the Rodgers contract, which, funnily enough, is what we were going to discuss next. I've seen a couple of people floating the theory already, and we're very early days in this transfer window for floating mad theories, but I've seen it getting tossed around that we seem to be back to a project signing transfer strategy. And possibly the reason for that is that the board knows that Rodgers doesn't intend to stick around, and so they're not going to give him any significant money to spend, and it's all going to be salted away for the next manager. You know, I genuinely don't know if anyone actually believes that our board of directors is salting away money to give to any manager, but let alone the next one, the one after him. But this is what happens when there is uncertainty. When there is uncertainty, you're going to get rumours and counter-rumours and stories and nonsense. And instead of just a rumour factory, you're going to have a whole rumour industrial complex churning it out day after day, as long as the manager's future's up in the air. And I personally don't think we can go into a season with this hanging over us. This has to be resolved one way or another before the season starts. The problem, of course, if it's resolved in the negative, if Rodgers turns around and says, I'm going to go at the end of the year, and we've discussed it inside the club, it's the right thing to do, then his authority as a manager starts to decrease from that moment on. He can't ask for proper money in January if he needs it at the end. So the longer it goes on, the more uncertainty there will be. The best way to end the uncertainty is just for him to sign a new deal. No, the way I see it, if he wants to go at some point, as far as I'm concerned, he's kept his promise, right? His initial promise was it would stay for the three-year term. He is going to keep that promise. Anything he does after this year is his own business. He's made good what he promised. He has fixed his relationship with almost all of us. And if he decides, if he signs a new deal and decides after a year, 2 years that he wants to leave, then he'll go with everybody's blessing as long as he does it right. So even if he signs a new deal and still wants to go a year, 2 years down the line, fine, right? But we can't have the uncertainty hanging over us going into this campaign. We need some sort of assurance of where we're going, and that folds into everything. Settles and relaxes the players, makes it easier to sell signings on coming to the club, especially if they're going to be big signings. If they're not going to be big signings and Rodgers doesn't sign a deal, people are just going to assume the worst. And that creates a whole negative feeling all the way through the campaign. And any slip up is going to be amplified and multiplied and shrieked through a megaphone 100 times. So I don't see how it's in anybody's best interests for this to drag on and on and on. Eric first on that one.
Well, the first thing I want to say is, you know, you said he's mended all the bridges are the bridges there and the relationships that were damaged and after what happened in his first stint. And I personally would never hold it against him what he did first time around, because I think we all knew especially us who would have been in the blogosphere or deep in the blogosphere, all knew that something was afoot with Peter Lawwell. And we all knew that Peter Lawwell was literally tying one hand behind his back. And
I'll qualify my own thinking on that one, right? I was at a meeting with Altied, Pat McVeigh from Resolution 12 on that subject on the day John McGinn signed for Aston Villa. And the night before, Celtic had played AEK Athens at Celtic Park. And Rodgers had mouthed off about this lack of progress in the signings at the pre-match press conference. And just before the game, a Celtic director spoke to Chris McLaughlin on the BBC and completely trashed Rodgers. And I mean, we all teed the following day. And I knew that either Lowell had been the one that briefed the BBC or had approved it, because his attitude towards Rodgers that day was fuck him, basically. And I knew that Rodgers wasn't going to hang around much longer. My anger at Rodgers' departure was the timing of it and the manner of it, nor the fact of it, because as far as I was concerned, he was gone at the end of that season. The relationship, to me, seemed dead and buried. Lowell's attitude that day was so negative towards him. I knew that things had been said or done or whatever had happened that was not going to be fixed. And so I never really held it against him that he left. I held it against him, the timing of it and the manner of it, where he took the whole backroom team with him and pretty much left us in the lurch. But the fact of it, I never doubted for a minute that it would happen. I never doubted the relationship had gotten so bad. I was angry at Rodgers at the time, but I was angry at other people at the club and all, because they deserved every bit of criticism that they never got for it. But sorry, mate, on you go.
Yeah, well, I was the same. I was angry at the time, but I understood it, and I understood the reasoning behind it. And I knew that there had to have been an awful lot in the melting pot in the background. I mean, the million wingers compliment, or the comment about a million. We have a million wingers when it came to, Daniel Arjani? And what's his name as well?
Schved.
Schved, Marian Schved. Yeah, so, I mean, look, I think at that point he just had enough and he didn't care. You know, it came down to the fact that he was at loggerheads with Lawwell, and that you know, the two just weren't going to stop butting heads with each other, and he just said, I don't want to do this anymore, and he left. But if I'm looking at where things are at right now, you're dead right and you're saying that we need clarity. We need to know, you know, he has fulfilled everything he said he would, but we need to know going into the season if he's just seeing out the year or if he's signing a new deal. Don't go into the season with the fans in limbo and giving us all these signs where poor level of signings, you know, low cost signings are brought in, all that kind of stuff. Because the main thing that a low cost signings does is gives you the feeling that these are not Brendan Rodgers signings, because Brendan Rodgers is leaving. So, look, I know there's rumors about that Daisa Maeda said that he would commit to, you know, a new contract if he was the first choice striker through the middle. Okay. Whether there's any veracity to those rumors remains to be seen. But we all said a few weeks back that if Daisa Maeda signed on long term, then that would probably or possibly be the catalyst to Brendan Rodgers signing on long term. So we have to hope that that's the case. But at the same time, if it's not, then we do need clarity. Because I suppose the big worry or the concern that I would have going into the new season, if Brendan Rodgers is only there for he's doing year three and he's seeing out year three, is he going to be fully committed to achieving the max? My belief is that it could be 50-50. He could be massively committed to going out on a high, having a treble in the bag, having done the best he could possibly do in the 3 years that he was there and walking away with his head held high. You know, or there's the other side of it. He just might not be massively committed to the job if he's just seeing out his last year. Yeah. And that worry is going to be in the back of your mind too. But Brendan Rodgers is a highly professional guy. You'd have to believe that if he's seeing out the year, he'll see it out on a high. So I think if we're going to see him going into the last year here, I think that's the focus we need to have. We need to have the focus that he's going to be professional about it and he's going to deliver everything he possibly can or possibly can. And I suppose the big aspect of that too is the level of challenge he's going to get from across the city. And I think in the short term, that's not going to be too strong. So he has an opportunity probably in this season to lord it over them again. But I suppose it also depends on the level of signings that we do and whether they're going to fit into his way of thinking and his way of operating, because that's the worry you have. If he doesn't commit to that third year, or if he doesn't commit to extending the contract and it's only for the third year, the players that are being brought in are probably not his signings. So there's that worry there too. You know?
What about you, Joel?
It's just uncertainty, which doesn't need to take place. But Rodgers will be 100% professional about it. He may have decided this is my last year. I'll see this out, and he'll not be putting his feet up because it would threaten his legacy. So he'll be giving it 100%. And if he can finish with another championship, another cup, and a run in Europe, then he'll feel very satisfied about it. But basically, the conditions haven't changed that much since he left the first time around. There's people inside Celtic Park that don't like him very much at all. And there's people who were appointed by a CEO that didn't like Brendan Rodgers, and they're still of that mindset. He's a bit demanding, and he's a bit annoying. He's looking for better. He's wanting the best training facilities. He's wanting the best pre-season. He's wanting the best all these things. Whereas if you get somebody that knows the city, they're just grateful for having the job and they'll go on with it. So the club, Rodgers came back, and if things had changed over the last 2 years, then I suspect he might be more willing to sign a new contract. But we can only assume that he's sticking with his three-year contract. That's going to answer a few questions for him. If he hadn't come back to Celtic, he'd always be a bit wary of things and questioning it, and did I do the right thing? But he's come back, he's delivered success. Unfortunately, the people inside Celtic have got the same attitude towards him, the same attitude towards investment, same attitude towards improving the club. So there's nothing really to suggest that he's going to sign a new deal. I think the club think they can probably wing it going into the season. Almost certainly they'll be above their City business partners. And as long as that's in place, most supporters will be happy. If things imploded, then they can point the finger at the manager over uncertainty about his contract. And that's their worst case scenario. But they'll probably think, as in most situations, that the mess across the city and Celtic being reasonably well run, having a core of five or six good players, and maybe getting another one or two coming in, that you can stay ahead. So it'll take some major developments. I don't know if it requires Dermot Desmond to twig and say, things will need to change. I need to make a few alterations if I'm going to keep this great manager. Because if things don't change, I don't see too many high-quality managers coming into a club that doesn't have a sporting director, doesn't have a modern scouting appraisal system, all these things that just, when it's Celtic, or that's the way Celtic do things. The type of manager that you should be able to attract has got a certain level of expectation, and they won't find that at Celtic, and following Brendan Rodgers will also be quite a difficult task. So there's a lot of questions, and I don't think anything has really changed since February 2019 when he left. He's back, he's doing his bit. The board are tolerating him because they know he's better than Neil Lennon. He's better than anyone else he could have got. They were hell of a fortune to get Ange Postecoglou. There's not many of them around. So they'll tolerate Rodgers. Rodgers knows what he's up against, and it'll take something very significant to change that course of events the way it's likely to play itself out.
Can I just make one point? I wrote an article today where I said, you know, the old saying, there's only two things certain in life, and that's death and taxes. And I said, for a Celtic fan, there's only three things certain in life: death, taxes, and the Celtic board remaining in place for the rest of my living days. and that's the reality. The same Celtic board has been in place for over half of my lifetime, and I don't expect that to change anytime soon. And unfortunately, that's the reality.
Next sobering thought there. I'll give you another one. the story, I kind of stop thinking about whenever I think about what Rodgers' level of support on the board is like, is a story about a couple of your directors, either at Ibrox or at Hampden, mouthing off in the media about how they gave him all this money to spend, and the three most expensive players were on the bench. Do you know what I mean? As if they have a right to criticise that, as if they've got a right to question how Rodgers deploys his resources. But all they could see was, we gave him that money and look what he's done with it. You know, as if they never made mistakes, as if Mark Lowell's entire tenure wasn't he just one colossal mistake, expensive mistake that we're still paying for. See, Joe said it last week, every single one of those players is still on our books. Every one of them.
5-year contracts. They're all in contract until 2028. And they made naff all contribution whatsoever last season. The players that the messengers were whispered to point the finger at Engels, Ida and Trusty, they all played significant parts in Celtic's Champions League in the season just finished. Yang, Telio and Palmer, hee-haw. So it's pathetic, but it's just a symptom of what goes on at the club. There's people dead set against him. There's one blogger in particular that sees Celtic as a development club and nothing else. He can't see past his spreadsheet. And these guys, they're taking their message from the top. And Rodgers will not be bothered about what one demented blogger that's been on the go for longer than he should have been is on about. But it's just a symptom of the general feeling within the club that we've got to tolerate and put up with this guy. But it'd be better if he disappeared, we could get back to the good old cosy ways.
Thomas Barnes is saying there. Sorry, no, there's one of the guys there. Is any chance of us saying something positive about Celtic? You know, it's a Celtic show. We always say positive stuff, but we're never ever going to let up on, you know, the inadequacies and the, you know, the failings of our board, because the three of us, you read our blogs, we only want better for the club. And we know the club can do a hell of a lot better. So we'll say plenty positive and we'll give credit where credit is due. But where criticism is due, it will always be forthcoming.
Always, always, always. So, Joe, do you regard Desmond's influence as the key to this whole thing then? Is he Brendan's guardian angel? Is he Brendan's only ally? And is that enough?
It's the strangest thing, because when Ange Postecoglou was leaving, Dermot Desmond got on the phone to Brendan Rodgers, got the wheels in motion, sweetened him up, brought him back, but unfortunately came back to the exact same setup and circumstances. So it's very strange. I don't understand. Well, I can't believe that Rodgers was duped into thinking that Mark Lowell was some sort of scouting guru or superstar. But Dermot Desmond makes the big decisions. He must have put such a case to Brendan Rodgers that come back, it's all different, it's better, I won't let it happen again. And he gets sabotaged in that first transfer window. He managed to pull a double out of it at the end of that season. So it's a strange role he has. He is the kingmaker. He makes the decisions and then he just sort of leaves things as they are. And the people that were involved in the disharmony with Brendan Rodgers first time around, they're still there. And Dermot will come in and fix things at the top. But if it's not sorted below, then the same problems are just going to recur.
Well, there's a reason he's called the absentee landlord. He's never really around. So, I mean, yes, he'll come in and he'll, you know, and if it's necessary, he'll smack some heads together, but then he goes away again, and when the cat's away, the mice will play.
Is his influence enough, but to convince Rodgers to stay?
No. He's been let down once, he's been let down twice. He'll need to see change in front of him before he commits for a third session. So Dermot's promises are quite nice and reassuring, but the reality is they don't stack up. And unless there's some serious change of attitude and personnel, it'd be a major surprise if Brendan Rodgers decided, yep, I like this, I fancy pushing on for more.
Good stuff. We seem to have ruffled some feathers in the comments tonight.
Ooh, there's a lot of board lovers out there.
Hard to believe, isn't it? Hard to believe. Mm. These people have been reading us all these years. It's hard to believe they didn't know how we felt. Listen,
That's it, Rebel 86. We've been successful in spite of them.
And I'm not
cheating. Not because of them.
We run the club. The people who run our club have made an incredible go of it in terms of stabilising the club's commercial position and everything else. And they've made two outstanding managerial choices in the last three. And I would go as far as to say that they made a third outstanding choice, albeit accidentally, when they brought in Ronnie Dyla, who was supposed to be coming in as Lennon's assistant. That guy has proved both at Celtic Park and elsewhere that he is nobody's assistant. He modernised Celtic's operation and dragged it into the proper century by changing everything for the way players behaved off the pitch to how they looked after themselves on it. And without that, there wouldn't have been an invincible treble for Rodgers to come in and win, because the team would have been in a hell of a mess and Rodgers would have had to sort out some very bad habits in the dressing room. And Ronnie did that instead and has never got anywhere near the credit. You know, if we had won 10 in a row, the thing I was looking forward to most was seeing that guy come onto the pitch and get his acknowledgement for the role he played in it. And I'm always sad that that never happened. And one day he's going to come back to Celtic as a guest or whatever, and he deserves the standing ovation of all time from our fans. There are two players in this current Celtic team who owe their Celtic careers to him, Kieran and Callum. And as far as I'm concerned, that alone makes him a towering figure in our recent history. But our board has not got everything right. It landed on the Ronnie appointment by mistake. It landed on the Ange appointment as a last ditch after they'd allowed a manager to drag us all over the pitch for a whole of a summer without actually gaining a commitment. They've lost Rodgers once and had the sense to go and get him back. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. That's only the mistakes they've made in terms of the managers and how lucky we've got in terms of the managers. I don't like depending on luck. I don't like it. I don't think a club of our size should be depending on luck. The mistakes they've made in other areas, the appointment of Mark Lowell, incomprehensible and inexcusable.
On the second appointment,
and the fact that they're still twitchy about it, right? And Joe is the proof that they're still twitchy about it. Means they know that that should never have happened in the first place and should never have been done. And they can't defend it, and they won't defend it. And that, again, is only in terms of player recruitment. The mistakes go even further than that. We've talked about the academy structure and how screwed up it is for ages. The thing is that these are not football people. If we'd have put a Martin O'Neill or somebody on the board years ago, somebody who actually understands the game and understands the needs of the game, rather than just the accountancy types and the corporate lawyers, we would be in a better place even than we are, right? The success we've had is none compared to the success we could have had. Not just in Scotland, but developing in Europe as well. And that's why some of us are so pissed off at times, because as good as we are, we could be a lot better. And all of us want to see us get better. And that's
We see the potential. It's that simple. We see the potential of this club and how much bigger this club could be if we had more imaginative people on our board. If we had more forward-thinking people on our board. We had a forward-thinking guy on our board for a very brief period of time. And that scared the living shit. That scared the living shit out of the people in the boardroom. Because they're very much believers of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don McKay wanted to fix it. He wanted to make it better. And because he wanted to make it better, he paid the price with his job. And that's ultimately what we're up against. What he did with Scottish rugby was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what he could have done.
As soon as he was gone, they went for the continuity candidate and appointed Mick Nicholson as interim. And once he was appointed as interim, there was never any question about who was getting the job. You know what I mean?
What he could have done.
One of the searches that led us right back to the guy who was on our own doorstep. Imagine that. Imagine the luck of that. Going on a global talent search and finding the guy you already had in the role was the perfect person all along. Amazing. Amazing. That only happens to us and the club across the city. Joe, what about you?
Kaiser hesitates. Just one thing there. Kaiser says that we should buy Shamrock Rovers. Dermot Desmond owns Shamrock Rovers. Does he not know that?
He owns 25% of Shamrock Rovers, but to all the cheerleaders and all the lads over from CQN for the night, being ahead of a club formed in 2012 is no earth-shattering achievement. Charles Green's a bit of a nutcase, and he set the trend. If that's your watermark, if that gives you kicks, if that allows you to text your Ibrox supporting friends on a Monday to say, ha, 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 look at you, great. Some of us got the aspirations a wee bit more than that. Our European coefficient is horrendous. Yes, and we haven't, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst and Barry Ferguson have won more European knockout ties than Celtic have in the last 20 years. That's horrific. There's various things like that. The domestic success is great. I enjoy it all. But domestic success has always ever meant you're better than one club. And the only measure of Celtic is how they're doing in Europe. And the last 10, 15, 20 years hasn't been very good. It's been pretty poor overall. With Ange Postecoglou got us back in the Champions League, and we get 2 points, and we were knocked out. Brendan Rodgers was involved the following season with a job lock from Mark Lowell. We won a dead rubber against Feyenoord, and we thought it was something special. Again, we finished bottom of the group. We had a good campaign last season, and that should be the benchmark, that old word. We should be able to do that 4 seasons out of 5, and every now and then, when a few circumstances come together, a bit of luck, players hit an extraordinary form, you might be able to go further. But if guys think that finishing ahead of Charles Green's team is some outstanding achievement and the pinnacle of all Celtic can ever hope for, good luck to you. Enjoy it. But one or two of us have got thoughts a bit more than domestic matters.
I like Ian Roy's comment, wondering if any has lived through the 70s or the 80s. No, Ian, yep. We were all born in the 90s. Can you not tell looking at us?
Nope. I remember...
You know, children in the 90s, mate. We were all born in 1992.
My first European match was Celtic Atletico Madrid, 1974. Nothing each then, get kicked off the park away from home. It was a long, long wait to reach. We reached the quarterfinals in 1979-80. That was Real Madrid. And then it was a long, long wait until we played Stuttgart in 2003. So, yep, lived through it all. And being in top of that club from across the city, fair enough if you want to do cartwheels and high-fiving your neighbours when you see them, great. It's not everyone's cup of tea. We should be doing an awful lot better in the bigger picture, which is called European football. That's where it's at these days.
I used to tell people that I grew up watching two things, Tories winning elections and Rangers winning titles. So I've got more reason than anybody else to be happy about the situation that we're in right now. But somebody actually said to me last year, so you were unhappy with Rangers winning titles and Tories winning elections. You don't seem very happy about Celtic winning titles, and you're definitely not happy about the Labour Party. So he's right about that. I guess I'm just a miserable git overall. Right, guys, we were going to talk about the SFA briefly, and I think we'll keep it brief, right? This has been a big week for Ian Maxwell. He's been doing all the TV studios talking about how the SFA is finally getting tough. But in the week that a Ibrox fan gets convicted for throwing a bottle at our goalkeeper, the toughest thing that the SFA can muster up is a charge against John Brown for a comment that he made about referees being corrupt on the club's own in-house TV channel. That one case, which was about nothing, which ended in a sanction that was almost inconsequential, has generated acres of coverage because they've made statements, the SFA have made statements, then they've made statements, then the SFA have made statements. Does anyone think that the whole thing is just a bunch of bullshit? A bunch of smoke being blown to hide the fact that the SFA remains as gutless as it's ever been. when it comes to actually tackling the things that matter. Joe.
Oh, yeah. It's just, it's been a close season deflection story again. He said this, we said that, he said this, he said that. Ibrox, all, they stood up to the SFA, cracking statement, that's it, the new owners get it, blah, blah, blah. Ian Maxwell, kids on, he's been tough with them, as you say. John Brown's comments are absolutely nothing in the bigger picture of 30 to 40 missiles being thrown at a Celtic goalkeeper at Ibrox. One glass bottle of Buckfast thrown in his direction, not very accurately, and the police managed to pick a guy out because he'd whiter teeth than the rest of the folk around him. Well done. Good to see the CCTVs working. In January, Arne Engels was prepared to take a corner. He was struck by a missile. Nothing happened. Not a peep from Ian Maxwell. Last April, Matt O'Reilly scored a penalty at Ibrox. Another glass bottle was thrown in his direction. Not a peep. Maxwell's hiding. So it was a nice distraction during the summer. The club from Ibrox showed how hard and tough they were standing up to the SFA, and the SFA showed how tough they are standing up to their friends at Ibrox. A £3,000 fine, and everyone's a winner. They can all take credit from it. And meanwhile, Celtic will be back at Ibrox on the 31st of August. And it wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world if a glass bottle was thrown at a Celtic player. And whoever's in goals for Celtic, I don't know if it'll be 30 or 40 missiles. It'll certainly be more than one.
Yeah, and it'll generate no controversy whatsoever unless Tom Boyd or someone else in Celtic TV makes a comment about it and suggests that the SFA get tough, in which case it'll be, oh, how dare he say that? How dare he question?
In reality, if Ian Maxwell had any balls and he wanted to get tough on this kind of stuff, he'd be closing down stands. He'd be doing the right thing, and that would be the right thing to do, because that level of abuse of players would not be accepted in any other league in Europe. No. And there would be serious sanctions. And if this guy is trying to say that he's tough because he fined them $3,000 because of a comment from a fucking moron anyway, an absolute moron, John Brown, and this is the best they can do. I mean, I'd say that they must be shitting their pants at Ibrox if that's the best they can do, you know? Yet, look, I mean, they still came out with a mealy-mouthed statement about it, but at the end of the day, let's see what would happen at Ibrox if Ian Maxwell should have stand in the stadium now. Then we'd be talking about fun and games, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and this whole thing about we'll withhold tickets for League Cup games, I mean, it's farcical, isn't it? It really is. This is the best they've got. This is the maximum punishment that they can come up with. The whole thing has just seemed contrived right from the start. When I heard they were going to do the case, I thought, well, you know what? If he said it, then maybe okay, right? But I expected that the club itself would be like, oh, come on, like you can't. Let's keep this in perspective and let's have a sense of proportionality here, right? Instead, they went nuts, thinking, this isn't worth going nuts about. What are you doing? Where are you dancing? Where is this going? And then you get counter statements, and then you get the case, then you get mayor statements. Like, this whole thing is bullshit. What's this really about? Because it's not about John Brown. It's not about that halfwit, as you say, right? It's not about him. Can it possibly be about him? So what is this really about? And it's about the SFA looking tough while doing nothing when there's real issues to tackle. I cannot believe the amount of coverage it got in the media, and I cannot believe all the sound and fury it generated for the club and for them again. And it was all just it was so obviously contrived. It's a completely fake argument. It's like that story about Lee Harvey Oswald getting in the fight with the Cubans outside Guy Bannister's office, if you watch JFK, right? Even the police who took the statement were like, this doesn't even look like a real fight. This looks like it was faked for the cameras or something, right? And that's what this is like. It's like absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely mad. And for Maxwell, in the same week, to be going in front of the media and doing the media rounds and talking about how it's the clubs who need to take responsibility. Well, the clubs won't take responsibility unless they are made to act responsibly. If the SFA were threatening them with anything real and meaningful, they would take responsibility. But it's just, it's not going to happen where they're talking all this crap. Really, it's mental. It's not going to happen where you've got guys like Maxwell on the front line anyway, because he is he's got absolutely no bottle at all. I mean, you'll actually look at the number of times in the last couple of years that the Ibrox board has released statements that are much worse than anything John Brown said. Much worse. And much more accusatory. And nothing got done about that. So the whole thing to me just stunk to high heaven from the start. Just absolute bogus nonsense to distract from the fact that they don't really want to do anything meaningful. It's just the usual. SFA, right? We've covered it. We've covered the SFA. Now we can get on to the wonderful EGM today. The newspapers are cock-a-hoop that the 20 million has been authorised. They're now expecting the money to start flowing into the managers' pockets to spend on players. The Ibrox board themselves have basically tried to tell them the day, don't get too ahead of yourselves. They've refused to disclose how much it the manager will get. But the media is running with the £20 million will be the managers to spend. The real headline is the one that wasn't in the headlines, which is that they approved their articles of association change. They can now issue shares to their own buddies to whatever limit they want. The 51% control, not only that has been obtained, but the structural change that is necessary for them to grab as much more as they need today, anything else that they want, has also been reached. So the Ibrox fans lost their club today. That's what I think. That's what I am. That's what I'm calling it. They lost their club today with barely a whimper. And the media is focused on the £20 million, the phantom £20 million transfer budget. And if you ever want a lesson in how completely lacking our media is, this is it today. The most important thing and the only thing that that meeting was called for was to approve the changes in the Articles of Association. That's what the meeting was about. Was it about anything else? Oh, Marathi and Kavanagh have achieved their objective and got the £20 million for the manager. That was not the objective for a start. The £20 million no going to the manager. So you want to talk about contrived, that whole thing is a farce. That what happened today at that club is a joke. The way the media is covering it is a joke. And the joke is on, and I don't want to sound too sympathetic for them because they don't really deserve any. But the poor Ibrox fans put all that money into the club and buying shares and everything else over the years, and who today were rendered completely irrelevant. Joe.
It was a non-event.
It was a big fucking event. It's a big deal what's just happened over there, but it's been certainly being treated as a non-event.
In football terms, nothing's changing. Douglas Park and various others would pop in £20 million over the course of a season to keep the lights on. So it's quite amusing. I mean, everyone that was there is just so utterly impressed by how well they spoke and how sincere they are and how genuine they are. I mean, I saw a clip and Andrew Kavanagh sounds like a Disney character. I mean, it was so sugar-coated and how genuine.
Explain that, but on you go, you're doing it.
He referenced Ibrox as being a castle, correct? It's old and fallen to bits. And this emotional tale that he was waiting in the queue to go to a New York Yankees game or something, and he got a phone call that changed his life, and would you like to buy the Glasgow Rangers? And as soon as that call was finished, 3 seconds later, he was on the phone to his good friend Parig Mahahi, or whatever he's called. And it is Disney stuff, and they're all lapping it up. It's fantastic. These guys, they're really genuine and the real deal. Good times ahead. But as you say, the club has been snatched away from them. They've not noticed that because they're overwhelmed by the feel good factor, by a few sound bites. There is nothing of substance. We don't know anything about the £20 million. What's going to the manager? I noticed they were quick to dismiss any prospect of stadium improvements, i.e. getting one more seat in Celtic. So that's the thing that drives so many of them. So there's nothing of substance whatsoever other than the club's been snatched away. They're off to America, and they'll continue with the... there's a great quote about their fan advisory board and how valuable that was. You'll probably remember last summer, the fan advisory board had a June meeting and they asked about rumours of problems with the redevelopment of the Copeland Road stand. Nothing to worry about, lads. Don't worry about it. Celtic supporters all making up mischief. And then 2 days later, it was announced that the stand was delayed and they're off. They're looking for a new ground. Ibrox was out of commission. They ended up playing games. They ended up getting knocked out of the Champions League at Hampden. So it's all froth. It's all Disney. It's great. Everyone's happy. And we'll see what happens. We'll see how long it takes Russell Martin to spend that $20 million. Meanwhile, Cyril Dessers and Robin Proper are sitting back. They've got their contracts elsewhere. They'll just wait to see the price drop and drop and drop. And then hopefully they'll get a payoff before they move on to pastures new. So, again, the close season cup is bound for Ibrox with ribbons on it this year again. And we'll wait to see the real action when it starts. And again, there has been no one sold. Not a penny has been raised by transfer fees. Yeah. The serial losers that finished last season under contract are all back again for more. The guys that were out of contract have moved on. And Lyle Cameron turned up today with a sore leg. So, long live the banter years. I don't think today was the end of the banter years. There's plenty more to run.
It's funny you should say that, because I'm quite sure that a couple of people predicted that their team would bear a striking resemblance to the one that finished last season when they turned up for pre-season training. Maybe it's just me. I'm sure I read that somewhere. I don't know if any of you guys, speaking of red... I don't know if any of you guys read Keith this morning. He was wonderful.
We did.
How Celtic will be tuned right into the Ibrox AGM, and that we would be desperate to hear what the plan was. We're all still waiting to hear what the plan is. Because as you said, Joe, that today could have been... you've heard me a Disney character. To me, it just waffled like a old school politician. Everything was painted in broad brushstrokes. There was very little detail, no detail whatsoever. None. There wasn't any coherent strategy laid out. It was all about how we're here for the long term and we don't have an exit strategy. Anybody who's just bought a company for that much money who doesn't have an exit strategy, I don't know how they ever earned the money to buy the company in the first place. Because you always have an exit strategy. Apparently they don't, because they don't envision going anywhere for a decade or more, right? But you never had any detail as to what will happen during that decade. They didn't even seem that concerned about how they're going to overhaul Celtic. It was all rather vague and, you know, oh, we're not just going to throw money at the problem. Well, again, I'm fairly sure I read that on some blogs. Certainly never read it in the mainstream media, who talked one lot of garbage about this from the moment it was raised. But I'll go back to Fergus, before he even paid a penny to buy Celtic, had already articulated what his plan was to the media. And so by the time Fergus got control, we all knew what Fergus was going to do. Then Fergus invited all the fans to come to all the open nights and all that stuff and see the scale model with the stand and the other model with the stadium would look like when it was done. And he laid it out for us and told us, look, this is how it's going to happen. We'll happen in these stages. This is what this one will cost, and we're going to need you to help us pay for it. And then there'll be this stage, and set yourself a 5-year target, at the end of which he was done and left. We all knew that right from the start. We knew what the whole scheme was and everything that it would involve. And these guys are in power now. They're in office. They've got the keys. And they still won't articulate any kind of vision for how they're going to achieve any of these goals. And the best thing is, they didn't even set out what the goals were. Some vague garbage about, oh, well, our objective is to be the best club in Scotland. It's a nice objective. But they haven't even turned around and said, within 2 years, we want the flag flying over Ibrox, right? I mean, that at least would have gave the fans and the shareholders who were there the day something, like some sort of concrete time frame. And it gave them nothing at all. Nothing. It's a blank sheet of paper on which the media is putting all its mental ideas. And these guys have barely had to say a word. They've took over the whole club. They've took total control of it as of today. And they have barely uttered a word about what the plan is. Barely uttered a word. Eric, what do you think?
Well, first of all, our Mr. Disney, Andrew Kavanagh, committed a cardinal sin today when he said that our objective is to cash Celtic. He shouldn't be, I mean, starting out here, he shouldn't be mentioning us. He should be talking about what's going on in his own patch. He should be talking about the ambitions for his club. And first and foremost,
us being obsessed, mate, we are all they ever think about.
Yeah. He's only in the door and he's already talking about us. So that in itself tells you an awful lot about the sort of mindset over there. But you're dead right in what you're saying. I was watching the commentary on the AGM and it was a few puff questions thrown at them. Nothing that could be even construed as challenging kind of questions were put to them. And they were just coming back with total obfuscation. They were skirting the issue, you know, and giving vague answers as to what they might be doing. I mean, even when they said about will all the 20 million be given to the, would you tell us what the transfer kitty would be? Well, we have an idea, but we're not going to say that. We're not going to tell you. Basically, we're not going to tell you what the idea of a figure we have for a transfer kitty. And Jackson's whole piece this morning about, like, curtain twitching Celtic directors, you know, they'll all be peering over the fence to see what's going on in Ibrox. It was totally barmy stuff. And I said, I wrote a piece on it myself, and I said, like, basically, the Celtic board will care about. They might have somebody looking at it. They sure as hell won't be looking at it themselves, because ultimately all the Celtic board cares about is Celtic and themselves. And when they will be concerned about what's going on at Ibrox, that will happen when they actually pose a threat. And right now, as far as they're concerned, they don't pose any threat to Celtic's dominance. So they're not the slightest worried about what's going on over at Ibrox. They're also smart enough to know what this EGM signifies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just like they know exactly what this EGM signifies, because they're the masters of obfuscation. You know, so they know exactly what the Yanks are up to and they know exactly what's going to happen over there. And again, we go back to the subject of, you know, the investment has gone from 50 million to 75 million to 100 million. And today it's quoted as 100 million in the papers. Now, if you're in, we'll just say it's 100 million. If you're investing 100 million in a club, you expect to get something back.
Of course you do.
And that's,
the higher that number is, the more concerned they should be.
Yeah. And that's basically what I said in the article that I wrote about Keith Jackson today. I said, the Americans are about to set out on an attempt to achieve a feat that has never been achieved since 2012 at Ibrox. And that's for a club to be sustainable, to break even, and to then push into profitability. They're about to set off on the path to trying to do something that has never been achieved since the inception of that club. Well, that's a tall order, and that is going to take time. That's not going to happen overnight. So for the Celtic board, they don't need to worry about the short-term goals of Ibrox. They need to worry about what the long-term strategy might be. And these guys have already said today they don't even have an exit strategy. So I think they're just winging it. I think they're just going to, like, Andrew Kavanagh and Parag Marath were saying, we're impatient guys. You know, we want to win. We're winners. Like, they're fucking lapping that up at Ibrox. Like, you know, we're impatient guys. We want to catch Celtic.
Of course.
They've shot themselves in the foot already. Because, like, you don't understand. This is the one of the fans actually said to them, do you know what you're letting yourself in for? Clearly they don't.
They don't have a clue what they're letting themselves in for. They don't have that. Whatever else I know about them, I know they don't have a clue about that. They don't have the first idea what they're letting themselves in for. Their names will be scrawled on bed sheets before long. They have no idea what's coming their way. No idea when the reality of what their planet today dawns on the fans over there and dawns on a media which has been willfully ignoring for the last couple of months. Honestly, the anger is going to be off the charts. Off the charts. They might be perfectly happy right now for the media to write their manifesto for them, knowing that they've not had to utter a word to get total control of the club. But once the reality or the broken promises that they never even made starts to set in, they will find out soon enough what they're involved in. They ain't going to like it. I don't think they're going to like it anymore. The fans are going to like it.
Wait till the first derby happens and we have a repeat performance of what happened in the last derby and there's a bottle thrown at somebody. This is a new board that's in place there. These are the kind of guys who go to sporting events in America and don't like they don't experience this kind of shit.
No,
they don't experience this level of abuse. They don't experience... So, like, if they speak up and say, like, we're not tolerating this kind of stuff, they're going to get fan revolt. Because the Ibrox fans have always been given free rein to behave the way that they do because, like we touched on earlier on, the SFA do absolutely jack shit when it comes to their behavior. So they feel they have free rein. But what happens if this board steps in and decides that they're not accepting that kind of behavior because they're, you know, stand-up guys who wouldn't tolerate this kind of behavior? So
I mean, if they want to go into the future, they want to look at the Walk for an Ideologues banner that the Union Brats have already put up. Well, they are the Walk for an Ideologues. That banner might not have been directed at them, but the next one will be. That's a sample of what your future looks like right there.
Yeah.
And I don't think these guys will get the first clue that they're involved in. The thing is, though, they can hide on the other side of the Atlantic. They never need to set foot here again. I mean...
Oh, yeah, I mean, we talk about an absentee landlord who's only across the Irish Sea.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are going to be 4,000 miles away. You know, so... And when the shit hits the fan, they can just run for the hills. So,
yeah, and... gated communities. Good luck protesting them, guys.
Paddy Stewart is going to be the punch bag for all of this, obviously.
Well, I mean, but... that's why he's remained on the board. That's why he stayed in post. Why he's one of the only people who has stayed in post. Because he very early done his, if you guys will permit a succession reference, his Tom Wormskind. He got in front of the media right away and acted as a pain sponge. I'll take all the punches on behalf of the guys above me. And he's perfectly willing to play that role. He said so. He sees that as the job. So, of course, he's going to take the flak. But as long as he's being well compensated for taking the flak, he's not going to care either. But he's already shown a willingness to do it. And that's the only reason he's survived while other people have been jettisoned already.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all going to unfold. As I said in my article today, they had a bona fide billionaire in the door 11 years ago. And we saw what happened there. Once this board does something that the fan base doesn't agree with, that's when the shit will hit the fan. That's when they'll know what they're up against. And it's inevitable it's going to happen because they haven't got a clue what they've taken on. And I think they'll realize sooner than later that they've, you know, they've bitten off more than they can chew. But we'll see.
I don't think it's going to take that long either.
Yeah, that's what I said sooner than later.
You might finish off, mate, and say something.
No, good luck to them. Wire in there, squeeze them for every penny. Take everything from them and they'll be off to America. I mean, we've seen what's going on at Manchester United, so fingers crossed that something similar goes on at Ibrox and sit back and enjoy it. Don't get yourself too worked up or excited about it. Enjoy
it. It's odd because you've the penny's wrapped again there when you're saying that. There was something else I was wanting to say about the AGM and Kavanagh has told them that the ultimate objective, and it's not even a distant goal, it's that we want to get this as soon as possible, is to make them self-sufficient and self-sustaining. Well, we've been dreaming about that for years. We've been dreaming about seeing an Ibrox board that ran them on a break-even, self-sustaining basis for years, because we know what that means, even if their fans don't want to accept the reality of it. But he's gave them it in pure, straightforward, black and white terms a day, and the media is still talking about the £20 million being spent. I mean, God almighty, what planet they live on, I don't know. But self-sustaining, he said it. He couldn't have said it more clearly. But they only hear what they want to hear. Incredible. So I want to thank you two guys for.
Can I just point out, James, we have we have a record number on the live stream tonight, 129. So our live stream numbers are growing exponentially week on week.
Thanks to everybody.
Thanks to everybody. That's a great showing. So keep liking, keep clicking the bell, keep giving us the thumbs up, and keep the comments flowing, as Joe says afterwards. Keep them coming in. But we're definitely showing or getting a cult following anyway, that's for sure. But it's been a good one tonight. It's been interesting. It's been very interesting. And thanks to everybody for coming on.
Thanks very much, guys.
Cheers.
See you all next week, lads. Enjoy the week.